You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hi, this is Gilbert Gottfried, and I'm here with my co-host, Frank.
One of those shows.
And we're once again recording at Nutmeg with our engineer, Frank Verderosa, who lost three shows.
I'm over here.
Yeah.
And our researcher, Paul Rayburn. I'll do
yes,
the honors.
Yes.
Who he has no peripheral vision to that side of the room.
I lost no shows.
Yes. Who? Yes. Oh, Paul is here to tell us movies are in color now.
I looked it up.
Yes. Oh, Lordy.
So one story I have to tell you. I was in California because my documentary Gilbert was premiering there.
Get the plug in.
Yes.
Where can we get it?
That's on iTunes. Get Darren. iTunes.
Yes. Darren says it's number 2 on
it's
iTunes.
It's number 2 on
Do
iTunes.
I have that right there. Yes. Thumbs up there, from Darren.
That's right.
Yeah.
Number one is what? Felix the Cat?
Or yes. Yours, Mine, and Ours with Henry Fonda. Yeah. Still holding on.
And with 2, you get egg roll.
I think it was 6.
Yes. Oh, with 6, you get egg roll. Oh, and if it's Tuesday, it must be Belgium.
That's it.
But anyway, go rent my documentary, Gilbert. There was going to be a screening out there, and 2 former podcast guests came in. The guy who was Nicholson from Car 54.
Oh, Hank Garrett was
Hank
there.
Hank Garrett That's was
great.
There.
That's great.
And he was one of those surprise episodes.
Oh,
where
yeah.
You go, you don't know that anyone remembers him, but people loved him.
Loved him. And he had a great time. He had the time of his life with us.
And the other one, Bill Macy.
Bill showed up.
Yeah.
At 95.
And now at the end of the show, I said, "Where's Bill Macy? I want to go over and say hi to him." And they said, "Well, he was having trouble breathing. He was choking, and it was really everyone was worried, and he had to leave right away." And I thought, well, this is it.
He's 95.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the next day we called Macy's home thinking someone's going to answer and tell us what hospital or morgue he's in. And Bill Macy.
It's a feel-good story that we opened with this week.
Bill Macy answers the phone.
Okay.
And we go, well, we heard you were suffocating in the theater and you couldn't breathe. And he goes, "I'm a 95-year-old Jew. What do you expect?" And we said, "Can we bring you a cup of coffee?" And he goes, I got up early. I drove out and got coffee." And we said, "Well, we're going to another screening tonight. Can we stop by your house and see how you are?" And he said, "I'm not at my house." And I figured that means he's in the hospital. And he goes, I'm 40 miles from my house. I'm at the casino."
Yeah, that's where he was when I called him. So he's fine.
Yes, and then he came over the next day to the hotel I was at, and he brought his own herring.
Of course, he travels with it in his glove compartment.
But basically, the documentary almost killed him. Is that
Yes,
would have been responsible for Bill Macy's death.
And he was great. He was just loads of fun.
And he was great. He was great on the show.
He loved doing the podcast. He said a bunch of times how much he loved doing the podcast.
That's nice.
He said it was the most fun he's ever had.
He's arguably the most fun guest we ever had.
Yeah.
Out of 180, so it's mutual.
Another one where we got loads of tweets about him.
Oh, my gosh. I read them to him on the phone when he was driving back from the casino, and he wouldn't let me off the phone. But usually there's 30 or 40 that come in for a guest, and this was something like 80 or 90 respond.
Crazy.
He kept making me repeat them. It was wonderful. Yeah. It's one of the nice things about the show.
Yeah.
You know, that you take a guy like that.
People who wonder if anybody remembers what they did in their whole career, and suddenly...
Yeah, I get that a lot when I call a guest to do a pre-interview and they say to me, you remember me? People remember me?
That
warms our heart
to
give them this forum. And they'll be saying that about us in about 18 months. Whatever happened to them?
But they won't remember the show.
What happened to those guys? We're going to fly around here a little bit for this mini episode, and we got some fun stuff, and we got Paul here with us, who's breaking news, as Gilbert said, the TV is now in color. Or was it movies?
Movies
are now in color.
I'm not sure about TV. Out of TV, I don't know. I didn't look that up.
Oh, and they might be getting rid of the rabbit ears on TV.
Really?
Yes.
And the Dumont Network folded.
Yes.
Paul brought us that tidbit about an hour ago.
And the Colgate Comedy Hour might be going off the air.
Hitchcock's show is still on, though, isn't it?
Yeah. These are three quick things. We usually do Producer of the Month on Patreon, and we pick a person. But this week we decided to be generous and pick three. Because these are all interesting ideas, we're going to try to squeeze them all in to one little tight show here. But Todd Luoto, L-U-O-T-O, he writes, I just found out that Frank wrote Garbage Pail Kids cards. I'd love to hear about that. I'm not going to take up a lot of time with this because there's not much to tell about them. But I will give credit to Mark Newgarden and Art Spiegelman. Art Spiegelman, the cartoonist who went on to win a Pulitzer for Mouse. Which is a great piece of work.
Who knew during the Garbage Pail days that he had that in him?
Yeah. I don't think when Art talks about his Pulitzer, I don't think he talks about Garbage Pail Kids very much. But I'm going to out him and say that he's one of the, he and Mark, who are two geniuses, really. And I was just along for the ride, myself and a lot of other talented artists. But it's fun, and I still get... people will send them to me in the mail. There is one funny to sign. There is one funny one. My wife walked in to my office one day, and she was just kind of like, she was emotional, and she was holding a handwritten letter. And she said, it's so sweet. Look at this. And it was, in kind of broken handwriting.
Yeah.
You know, very, very sloppy handwriting. And she said, and someone sent two of my Garbage Pail Kids cards to sign.
Wow.
And she said, it's so sweet. He's 7 or 8 or however old he is, and he cares about this, and it's his name, and you have to sign these. And she was very emotional about it. And just to satisfy my curiosity, I Googled the name. He's a 47-year-old guy with a band.
Oh, jeez.
Who probably takes the signed ones that he sends to not just me, but all the artists and sells them on eBay.
Oh, well, he's not going to make any money in a band.
My wife got so upset because she thought it was a... Yeah, she thought it was a child, and it's not. It's a guy in his mom's basement. but of course, I signed it and sent. Now here's another one, Frank P. And you'll appreciate this, Gilbert.
Yeah.
He wants to know your take on pop culture. Gilbert's take on famous pop culture arguments. So this is interesting. He would like to know Ginger or Marianne.
Oh, now that's interesting. I never really got into the whole. Ginger or Mary, but I guess Marianne was kind of hot looking.
Yeah, you didn't pleasure yourself to both?
Yeah.
That's very democratic.
I didn't watch Gilligan's Island that much, but I took Veronica over Betty.
Oh, that's important.
I'm surprised at Marianne because I think she's too wholesome for you.
You're more of a voluptuous movie star redhead type, aren't you, than the girl next door in the short shorts?
Yeah, she had a nice body.
Dawn Wells.
Yeah.
We had her here, of course.
Podcast guest.
And I wouldn't have turned down Ginger.
What about Lovey Howell? Does she get any love?
And I always wanted to fuck Jim Backus.
I think we've broken some ground.
That just
again
goes
here.
Without. That was next on my list. Thurston or the Skipper?
Yes.
No, he's got a list here.
And I wanted to fuck Jim Backus, and when he came, I wanted him to go, "Oh, Gilbert, you've done it again."
So you've now, it's a mixed metaphor. You've now added Magoo.
Yes.
Beatles or Stones, he would like to know. Frank
Beatles.
P. Beatles. Hands down. You didn't hesitate on that one. Flintstones or Jetsons?
Flintstones.
And why? Would you like to give your reasoning about
that? I don't know.
Explain
I mean,
on some of these.
As empty as the Flintstones were, which was pretty lame stuff.
But it was the Honeymooners.
Yeah. I thought like the Jetsons was like an even emptier version of the Flintstones.
Interesting.
The Jetsons was pretty suburban. I mean, there wasn't a lot of character development there.
Right, yeah.
You know, whereas, like, the richness of Barney and Fred.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, the richness.
The richness, yeah.
Describing them like Othello and Iago. Yeah. The Jetsons was the second one. So right. it's always right. smacked of, okay, we need to throw another one out there.
Yeah.
It lacked the same kind of originality. Although George O'Hanlon, kind of brilliant as George Jetson, underrated.
Oh, and when they got in, what was it, Kudzu? Or on the Flintstones?
Oh, well, the great Kazoo. Gazoo.
Gazoo,
yeah. Harvey Korman.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, where it's like a little Martian character that only Fred Flintstone could see, and I thought, this, you talk about jumping the shark.
Okay.
That one was...
So that's where the Flintstones started to lose you.
Oh, yeah.
Fred had the DTs in
the
subsequent...
He had the DTs, and he saw Harvey Korman.
We will return to Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast after this.
And now back to the show. I know your vote on this one. I think I do. Adam's Family or Munsters?
Munsters.
Because?
I don't know. I never got into the Addams Family.
It's interesting. I love both of them for entirely different reasons. Yeah.
Which was first of those?
Oh, God. I think...
Because the Addams Family came from the New Yorker cartoons.
I'm going to blow
and
this.
And I always had this idea that the Munsters was the Jetsons, you know, the second one to come along.
If we had a researcher here, we could look it up.
Well, let's just see if we can find one.
See if you can find a
if
researcher.
I can get my phone
make
out of
a
the
call.
Pocket of these
come,
tight jeans.
Come back in 2 years from now, and you'll have the answer.
I want to say the Munsters was first, and the Addams Family was the answer
I'm gonna
to the Munsters.
Get, 25 cents says
but
it's
I could
the other
be
way
asked
around.
Backward. I mean,
and that I've spoken about him before on this show. The guy who played Pugsley.
Ken Weatherwax.
Oh, God. He had a miserable...
Yeah, a sad life. Yeah.
He was picked on in school.
Yeah, and died young.
Yeah, he died young. When he was in the Army, he got picked on.
Now, Felix Silla, who played who played Cousin Ed on that show, is still around. Do I dare book a little person on this show? I asked Gino. I said, Gino, Felix Silla's alive. Can you call him? I don't know if that's a good idea.
I got an answer, which I'm tempted to hold it a few months just so I
tell
don't
us.
Disappoint
I know
Gilbert.
I'm wrong, right? Adam's Family was first?
The Addams Family and the Munsters were 50 years old in 2014. They started the same week
September
1964.
Okay, there you go.
Wow.
How about that?
I'm vindicated.
And one of the Munchkins is still around.
Jerry Marin.
Yeah.
But not in very good shape, from what I understand.
Because he used to look great.
He did.
Yes. You didn't harbor any personal attraction.
He was people's sexiest midget alive, 6 years running. Forgive me.
But then the next year, he lost out to Michael Dunn.
Miguelito Loveless. How fucking funny was that Jackie Martling story about Michael Dunn was it Sophia Loren?
Oh!
God, that was funny.
I don't know if we talked about this, but I got into a conversation with Jackie, the joke man. And you know how in Hollywood Boulevard, she's having a funeral for her pet chimp.
Yes, in Sunset Boulevard.
Oh, Sunset Boulevard, right, right. I mean. And according to legend,
yeah,
these old actresses and rich women,
oh, I know where you're going,
LA,
with this,
would train chimps to go down on them.
And I will never look at J. Fred Muggs the same way.
Good boy.
But, wow. But now Planet of the Apes gives me a hard on.
That is a scandal. That whole story, we're going to have to do a future episode about that. Now I'm intrigued.
Because I think during the making of Sunset Boulevard, when they're doing the funeral scene, Billy Wilder yells to
Gloria Swanson.
Gloria Swanson. He yells to her, remember, you're fucking the monkey.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So the whole thing was like a sick, dirty Hollywood in-joke to have the monkey in the movie.
Yes.
Wow. Okay, I'm going to try to keep going. This is a tough one for you.
I'll be talking with Kelly Ripa tomorrow about monkeys going down on old ladies.
I think I know your answer to this one, too. Leno or Letterman?
Jeez.
Wait, the answer is your cell phone goes off.
Of course.
Is that Jay calling in?
Okay. So which one?
Leno or Letterman?
Leno or Letterman? Well, you know, both of them actually had me on.
Right. In different capacities.
But Letterman used to have me on to do stand-up, and Leno used to have me on to do those bits. And the bits in the beginning of the show I loved doing.
Right, right. Oh, yeah. You were great.
Yeah.
You were with Jack Riley and all those sketches shows.
And what's his name, who was later on The Sopranos?
Sciarippa.
Yes.
Steve Sciarippa. Funny guy.
Yeah.
And lastly, Godfather or Godfather 2?
Wow.
Oh, that leads right into our next topic.
You see,
here we go.
I just did a segue.
Frank,
I got a segue. See,
brilliant.
I thought this through, Paul. To quote Letterman, they don't give these shows to just chimps.
I think I may have to go with Godfather 2.
Controversial, but
yeah.
I agree with you.
I do too.
Yeah. I mean,
that's the deeper, richer film.
I would say, so we wanted to talk about sequels. Which sequels were better than the originals?
Funny you should say that, Paul.
That occurred to you, Frank?
Not at all.
The spontaneity on this show is stunning, I think.
And it's funny to think, and then years later, Godfather 3 was so awful.
Yes,
yeah.
Atrocious.
But
atrocious.
I would say...
Would you?
Godfather 2 is the best sequel compared to its original.
Well, we're all in agreement then.
Yeah.
But Paul Byrne... Byrne,
mm-hmm.
wrote in with that very, he posted on Patreon, and he suggested it for a Producer of the Month episode.
There you go.
So you see, there was a segue. There was a method. There was a method to my madness. I lured you in with The Godfather versus Godfather 2. So, really, what the point of this episode was going to be is talking about sequels that are better than the originals.
And they brought in these characters that just seemed to fit perfectly. Usually, when they bring in a character, they stand out like a sore thumb.
In Godfather Part 2, you're talking about.
Like Hyman Roth?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
With Lee Strasberg and Michael Vigazzo.
Oh, it's Frankie Pantangeli.
I mean,
Michael Corleone did this, Michael Corleone did that.
And I said,
yeah, sure.
A playwright, by the way, yeah. Michael Vigazzo. Yeah. He wrote A Hat Full of Rain.
Really?
Yeah.
But that, I mean, the other thing about that, the way it was both a sequel and a prequel. I'm not sure there's another example of that. And he beautifully handled going back and forth between the two stories.
Yeah. And HBO runs this thing from time to time called The Godfather Saga. Where they have you seen this? Where they have the deleted
scenes?
They
clip it. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Well, they put the lost scenes into the story.
They tell it's like a 10-hour thing or something.
And all the scenes that were cut from the originals, you could lose them and never miss them.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know why they were. You know why Coppola made the decision.
I've never
and
seen that.
I don't know that he willingly went back and put them in. We'll ask our listeners who will know. But Did he willingly put them back in, or he was just they made him say we can cash in again here with a third version of this?
And Michael Corleone had a lot of buffers.
Joe Spinell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can honestly say some of my best friends have been Italian Americans.
that's an actor named G.D. Spradlin.
Yes.
Who was in a lot of stuff. And boy, that you're right. They introduced so many wonderful characters into the second film. And you think, oh, these are going to be Johnny Ola, played by our pal Dominic Chianese.
Oh, my God, yes.
It is. I think when people have conversations about what is the best sequel, that's the one that comes to mind. But I know there's another one very near and dear to Gilbert's heart.
What year are we talking
about? I'm talking about 1935.
1935. I know exactly what you're talking about.
1935. Would this be Bride of
Frankenstein? It sure would be. You're on the beam tonight, my friend.
Because they had him meet the blind character right out of the original novel.
What was that?
Well, the blind man shows up.
Oh, the blind, right. Yeah. The first thing my mind always goes to is the young Frankenstein version.
Right, of course, because you can never watch that scene and take it seriously again after Gene Hackman. But it's true. The second movie, and we talked about this with Rupert Holmes and with Mick Garris and so many of our horror, and Sven Gulli and so many of our horror guests, it's a totally different animal than the first movie.
Oh, yes.
It's less stagey. It reflects James Whale's weird.
Oh yeah,
they're both James Whale.
Yes, right? They are. But the
so
second,
what happened?
I don't know that much where he was going with that second.
He starts putting like religious symbolism.
Yeah, for one,
there's a crucifix over the monster.
Yeah, I don't remember. Plus, also the kink. There's the whole Pretorius character.
Oh, yes,
right.
You know,
right.
And Pretorius is described as queer old gent.
Yeah. Well, the whole film has a gay subtext.
Right.
And also, and I'm sure we'll get angry mail for this.
Go ahead.
It has a little bit of camp, which isn't in the first movie. And and you watch it and you're thinking, does this work? Am I accepting this? What do you think of the scene where the bride is introduced and suddenly Karloff is doing that little, he's wooing her?
Oh.
Do you buy it? Or does it take you out of the movie?
Well, the other parts. Well, I mean, as we've discussed already, Uno Connor, gets on your nerves real quickly.
Yes, she wears out her welcome. But there's so much to love in that film.
Oh,
there's so much to love in both films. But the second film is special, and it's got a lot of weirdness and a lot of originality and a lot of.
Now that one comes up all over the web, but can you think of any others from your favorite era there around that time where the sequel was better than...
Paul's making me think he has a list sitting in his lap.
I mean, those are the only two cases where I thought the sequel's been... Usually the sequel's like a rehash of the first one.
Yeah, I mean, I have a... Should I go through a few here?
Just knock off a couple. We got about 5 minutes here.
All right, what do you think? Terminator 2?
Yeah, better
than the sequel.
Yeah.
These were on.
I think that's
an IMDb poll. People asked me about.
I think
sequels.
People agree on that.
Star Wars: The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, Gilbert's not a Star Wars guy.
Star Wars.
Yeah.
Godfather.
Star Trek 2, by the way, is a better.
Star Trek 2: The Wrath of Khan.
Yeah, which Gilbert's
that's
also
right.
not into.
That's right.
Yeah.
Aliens, another one. This is the dumbest title of a sequel. The first movie is called Aliens. And the sequel is called Aliens.
Yeah, a different movie. I like the first one a lot.
In Aliens 1, the first Aliens.
Right.
I liked seeing Sigourney Weaver's ass crack.
Well, the question is, did we see more or less of it in the second movie? And we're gonna have to dispatch a team, our staff.
If we ever get her on the show, that's his opener.
That's right. So here's one I think you probably know.
Yeah,
The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Yeah,
that's better than the first two.
That's the third one.
That's the third one
in the
in the Dollars trilogy.
Yeah, what do you think?
Full of dollars, few dollars.
You familiar with those?
Not the sequels,
Yeah, The Fistful of Dollars.
Yeah. Oh, okay,
you know, and the second one was For a Few Dollars More.
Yeah.
And then The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, which is the best film of the three.
Who were the good, the bad, and the ugly?
Well, what's his name? from Godfather 3.
Eli Wallach.
Eli
Wallach was the ugly.
Yeah. Sure was. And Lee Van Cleef.
Lee Van Cleef was the bad.
Right.
And Mystery. Clint Eastwood was the
good. And getting back to Godfather 3.
Yes.
That their characters looked like they were shoehorned, the new characters.
Yeah. Well, he didn't have Duvall.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't have... You know, he didn't have Khan, obviously. He didn't have the actor, he didn't have the characters who were dead.
And how did the sister...
They had to make Diane Keaton somehow come back into his life, which didn't make a lot of sense.
That was awful, because what's so powerful is that he closes off from everyone.
Well, and you're invalidating what you've worked so hard to successfully establish in the first two films, which is the price that he pays by losing her.
Yes.
And suddenly she's back.
And the son is an opera star.
and Andy Garcia. And Winona Ryder was cast as the daughter, and then something happened, and he made the fatal mistake of casting his own daughter, who became a great filmmaker in her own right, by the way. I just saw her remake of The Beguiled with Colin Farrell, which is excellent. But boy, that film... And I feel bad for her because she's just, it wasn't of her doing, and she was young. But even George Hamilton and Wallach and all. And
it's another one. It makes what we think maybe is the best sequel ever and then makes a terrible third film.
In his defense, he resisted Paramount for 20 years and said no 1,000 times, and I guess they wore him down.
Yeah. And then one guy.
Chico needed the money.
One of the murders is a guy getting stabbed. With eyeglasses.
I don't even remember that. I remember seeing it and being depressed for days. Just thinking, why did this have to happen?
And the big ending where Michael, she's shot. His daughter, Michael Corleone's daughter.
Right.
And her last words is looking at Michael going, Dad. And it's like... This should have been a lot more powerful.
You know what that movie's missing? You.
Yes.
So I think
you should have been God in Godfather 3 as the Jewish consigliere.
Yeah.
You should have reprised your Sidney Bernstein role from Beverly Hills Cop 2.
If we're ready to wrap,
I've got one more to
take us out on a high note. Okay, so this one, it's hard to even think of these as sequels. There have been so many of them.
Yeah.
But favorite Bond picture. And I don't just mean the ass crack of the Bond girl in the picture, but the actual movie.
Well, they consider, I've seen some of these articles, they consider, they would put Goldfinger on this list as a successful sequel. But can you really think of the Bond pictures as sequels?
You know,
they're their own.
That's right. I mean, Goldfinger is certainly one of the best.
It's a stretch.
But so is From Russia with Love, which was before Goldfinger.
They're both better than Dr. No.
Right.
But
right.
I don't consider either of them sequels. Do you, Gil?
But, well, Dr. No had a Jewish Bond villain.
Oh, now that you bring that up, somebody wrote and corrected us. A fan said Yaphet Kotto was born Jewish.
He did not convert.
His father was a Jew.
His father was a Jew?
Yes, he was born Jewish. Two people corrected me, and I had to change this week's synopsis.
Wow.
So there you go.
I thought for sure he converted.
So did I. We even put it in the synopsis, but we were proven wrong.
But you know, he looks Jewish.
He does. I think he's Ashkenazi. Here's one last one. Shot in the Dark.
Shot in the Dark.
Better than The Pink Panther.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
They didn't have it right in the first one. They were close, but then Shot in the Dark.
With Elka Summers.
Yeah, but the character was forming still in the second,
and the second
movie is better.
The great nudist colony scene with the guitar.
Yes.
Yeah. You know?
And, of course, Beyond the Poseidon Adventure. No, I'm kidding.
Poseidon
and
2.
And Sting 2 with Mac Davis.
Yeah, Jackie Gleason and Terry Garr.
We can do a whole thank you, Paul Byrne, for the idea, and this was fun, and we'll do more on it down the road, but we could do a whole episode about the world's worst sequels.
Yep.
And we could go for weeks. We could live for weeks on that one.
Well, the famous bad sequel, the one to Grease.
It's not good.
Yeah.
No. Were you aware there was a Birds 2?
Birds 2.
No. Yes. I did a lot of research on sequels, and I don't know, I was on Uproxx or Reddit or one of those sites, and I found these really bad sequels that I didn't know existed. There was a Lawrence of Arabia sequel with Ralph Fiennes that was for TV. And Another Midnight Run. It was called Another Midnight Run. Did you know that?
No.
I don't know what happened to these things, or they went direct to video, or
any number of Jaws.
Oh yeah,
sequels that get worse as they go on.
Yeah. Jaws kept getting worse.
They should have made the comedy. They were National Lampoon was going to make Jaws Three People Nothing.
So, like some of these things, once they get it, you know. So Friday the 13th, people like Friday the 13th Part Two, but there's Friday the 13th, Friday the 13th Part Six, Freddy versus Jason, Friday the 13th Part Two, Friday the 13th Part Seven, The New Blood, and on and on.
There was Leprechaun in the Hood.
I got one. August is an old one. I think Magnum Force, the second Dirty Harry movie, is better than Dirty Harry.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
And
so
also,
so there.
Yeah.
What I love with sequels.
Send me hate mail. I don't care.
With sequels, all the characters forget what happened in the first one.
That's it.
You know, it's like Jaws 2. Nobody believes there was ever a shark in the water.
Right. I watched some of it the other day, and it's wretched.
Yeah.
And the poor guy that had to follow Spielberg.
Yeah.
And just cash the check because Universal said,
we got to have it.
We got to have it. And then the mayor has to be the asshole all over again. Murray Hamilton. You know, he's been disgraced in the first movie. He's got blood on his hands, and he's got to come back a second time.
Right. And
be a schmuck again and say, what?
Well,
Sharks?
Roy Scheider is in the scene, too.
And Michael Caine cashing his check so obviously.
Jaws 4.
Yes.
The Revenge.
Where he, there's a scene, too, where he falls in, he's in the ocean because I think the shark eats a helicopter. And he climbs out of the water. And he's not a drop of water on him.
There you go.
Right. Yeah, he's totally dry.
By the way, he's also in Beyond the Poseidon Adventure.
Yes, yes.
All right, Mr. Gee.
Okay, so this has been Gilbert and Frank's Amazing Colossal Obsessions, and we found out pictures aren't sound.
Now, wait a minute. I actually answered a question in this episode.
Paul was a valuable asset this week.
In comparison to any of his others. He's valuable.
In comparison to a drawing of Paul that we propped up in the chair. Yeah. The poster that we made of gesso.
You guys are going to make me cry.
Thank you, Paul. We'll see you next time.